Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Earlier this week, Britain pledged 14 Challenger 2 tanks to Ukraine as pressure intensifies on Germany to commit to sending some of their Leopard 2 tanks. Poland and Finland have also indicated their willingness to supply battle tanks. Russia's Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said the tanks will burn just like the rest in their battle against Vladimir Putin's military. But can diplomacy play any role now in bringing forth a resolution in Ukraine, or is this heavy weaponry the only answer? Well, joining me now is Hamish de Breton Gordon, who's former commander of the Royal Tank Regiment, and also John Everard, former British ambassador to Belarus and North Korea. And thank you both for joining us this morning. Hamish, to start with you, yesterday on the programme here, I spoke to the Ukrainian MP, Lesia Vasilenko. She welcomed the offer of these Challenger 2 tanks from the UK, but she did say that the German Leopard 2 is more suited to the terrain in her country. Do you agree with that?
Well, I absolutely agree with her sentiment. I think, first of all, it's great that, Britain is leaning into this and, providing Challenger 2. I'd like us to send a lot more. In fact, I would probably send them all. You know, they're not going to defeat the Russians sat in tank sheds in the UK. But when your specific question, Challenger 2 and Leopard 2 are very, very similar tanks. There's a lot of difference between them. They're both very, very capable. Great firepower, mobility. The key thing, they can fight at night, which the Russian tanks can't. And hearing the Kremlin panicking about setting fire to the British and other tanks, they're very different from Russian tanks. You know, our tanks were designed to protect the crews, which Russians weren't. So I think this is potentially a game changer. Ideally, there are many more Leopard 2 tanks around. It's only Britain that has Challenger 2s. So having lots of Leopard tanks would certainly make a difference. In capability terms, they are both very similar, but they could provide that shock action and manoeuvre to get behind the very static Russian forces at the moment and bring about, I think, the most likely defeat in the short term of the Russian forces, so that we can get to the political and diplomatic piece to negotiate a decent peace. But I think tanks will be crucial in the next couple of months.
John Everard, so do you agree with that suggestion as outlined there by Hamish, that the first thing that needs to happen is the hardware, the tanks, as many as possible from supporting countries, then comes the diplomacy?
Well, yes, I do. Not least because I think if you tried diplomacy right now, you simply wouldn't get very far. Both sides have set out very hard-line positions, and if you put them together in a room, all you'd have would be a screaming match. I mean, it may be that further down the road that the position of one or other of the sides softens to the extent that you might be able to work towards some kind of negotiate a solution, but we're a long, long way from that point at the moment.
People might be surprised to hear you say that as a diplomat with many years of experience, not least with North Korea. I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that there is no hope of any sort of a resolution through using diplomatic means.
Well, yes, I mean, diplomacy is the art of the possible, and it follows from that you have to recognise the impossible as well. The diplomacy or other negotiated solutions only work where there's a certain amount of possible common ground between the two sides. And you have to pick your moment, you have to pick your intermediary, you have to handle these things very carefully. And right now, that kind of common ground simply doesn't exist. Remember that quite recently, President Zelensky signed into law a decree saying there could be no negotiations with Russia for as long as President Putin was in power. It's a fairly tough position. Mm-hmm. I suppose that over time that might be softened, but I think there'd be very great reluctance in the West to urge the Ukrainians to make any kind of concessions to the Russians. I think there are strong moral issues here as well.
So, Hamish, coming back to the question of tanks, how many tanks do the Ukrainians say they need? We know that 14 have been offered by Britain. That doesn't come close to what might make a difference, you've said earlier. But what is the tipping point?
I think the Ukrainians are asking for about 300. And to me, that sort of sounds about right. And, you know, the next question, you know, are there 300 available? Well, there probably are. I personally think the UK should give a great deal more. But the critical thing as well is something that you will no doubt have heard, this all arms combat that people at Eye talk about. You know, tanks are tremendously effective because of their firepower, maneuver, ability to fight at night, but only when they're supported by other elements, infantry and artillery. And the reason, you know, lots of people are saying thousands of Russian tanks have been taken out, so isn't it going to be the same case here? Well, no, absolutely not. The Russians have sort of used their tanks as pillbox, unsupported, and have been taken out very effectively by the British NLAW anti-tank weapons and also drones and elsewhere. So I think 300 would provide a really strong force that the Ukrainians could probably split into about three divisions, three separate fighting forces, because ideally they don't want to just attack in one area. They want to attack in several areas. Ideally, they want to get behind the Russians and envelop them. And once you're behind a force, it really is spent. It's very difficult to fight and turn around, particularly the way that the Russians have become so static. So 300 ideally, 100 and an absolute minimum, and get them as quickly as possible, because it's going to take a few weeks for Ukrainian tank soldiers to convert onto Leopard and Challenger, but it's not insurmountable. I converted the 2nd Royal Tank Regiment from Challenger 1 to Challenger 2 fairly easily, so it can be done. There is logistic support already, you know, across the EU to help do this. So I think it's all very achievable. We need decisions sort of today, certainly latest by Friday, to be able to get this tank force moving.
Where are they? Where are those tanks?
Well, at the moment, of course, we've got a number of the Challenger 2 in the UK, although there are quite a lot of Challenger 2 in Europe, in storage in Germany. The Leopard tanks, we've heard that the Finns and the Poles have already offered their Leopard 2 tanks, but they need German export licenses, bizarrely, to be able to do that. And of course, the German army itself has many hundreds of Leopard 2 tanks. I'm not sure what state, as in mechanical state, they're in, but between those three countries, they must be able to muster a couple of hundred. And of course, there are other countries like Australia and Canada who are part of this coalition who also have Leopard 2. So reaching that figure of 300 is entirely possible, but an absolute bare minimum of 100. And I would hope that Britain puts many more Challenger 2s into the fight. You know, up to 100, I think, is very doable.
OK, so what are the implications then, John, if that were to happen? Say, let's take the example of Britain, and we'll talk about the German apparent reluctance to do this in just a moment. But if Britain were to send all of those tanks, as Hamish has suggested, to Ukraine, what would be the impact on British security?
Well, senior British officers have already said that the tanks, removing tanks from the British army, clearly weakens it, and they called for those tanks to be replaced as quickly as possible. I don't know how fast the tank manufacturers can meet that need. The implications for the way that the Russians see us, Russian radio this morning had a long discussion piece saying the reason that the British are doing this is that they are panicking because of the Russian advances in the front line around Bakhmut. You know, there's been a lot of fighting there.
Yes.
And that the long-term British aim was simply to kill as many Russians as possible, which is gory and wrong, but that is the way that we're being seen. Clearly, if you send even more tanks, then you know, that narrative is going to become even more shrill. Going back to tank numbers just for a moment, if I may, minimum of 100, Hamish says, Ukraine's asking for 300. You may have seen that Sir Richard Barons, a former UK general, has said that if you could raise that to 500, then that is, in his words, game over. Ukraine just sweeps the Russians off the board. Be nice to get there, though I can see there might be a few difficulties.
What about this German reluctance? The Germans have said that the tanks that we're talking about, Hamish, are not ready. The Guardian was reporting that they won't be ready, the Germans said, until 2024. What do you say to that?
Well, I think there might be a bit of smoke and mirrors here, and I might well have got it wrong, but this is Rheinmetall, the manufacturers, who have said that they have 80 Leopards in stock, as it were, that would take them a year to get them up to speed. That might well be true, but nobody's asking Rheinmetall to gift tanks to the Ukrainian military. What we're asking is the Russian government, the German government. In other words, the German army has hundreds of Leopard 2s, presumably in its tank regiments, and presumably, hopefully, a lot of them are ready to go. It's those tanks that we're asking the Germans to give to the Ukrainians. We know that the Finns and the Poles already have tanks. So I think the Rheinmetall, the story in The Guardian, is you know, I can see why somebody's written it, but I think it's slightly irrelevant in this particular case. And just picking up your point on Richard, on the view from some senior officers in the British Army that giving Challenger 2 to the Ukrainians is going to weaken the army. Well, it's going to certainly reduce our amount of tanks, but you know, these tanks are the Ukrainians are actually doing our job. They are fighting and destroying Russian armor. I had the great honor to be the Peshmerga's chemical weapons advisor in the fight with ISIS back in 2017 in northern Iraq. Now, the Peshmerga defeated ISIS without the Brits and the American and others having to put boots on the ground. So I think, you know, this is an existential fight against the Russians at the moment. And having British tanks being crewed by Ukrainian soldiers fighting the Russians is, I think, as good as it can get as far as British defence goes. So, you know, it's no good having Challenger 2 tanks sat in hangars in the UK if Russia prevails. So I rather disagree with some of our senior officers at the moment on this case.
And Hamish, what do you say about the German position? Because a lot of pressure is being put on Germany and it seems to be resisted at this point when it comes to supply of tanks.
Well, I'm sure the ambassador probably has a much more coherent view than I do. I find it very difficult to understand. Russia is a lot closer to Ukraine. Germany is a lot closer to Ukraine and Russia than we are here in the UK, and you guys are in Ireland. I would have thought they would be absolutely bending their back and straining every nerve and sinew to make sure that Ukraine prevails here. So I'm sure there are political and other reasons, and perhaps elections coming up, why they are being slightly reluctant. But I absolutely don't understand it, and I hope come Friday, the German government will provide those tanks.
John, do you understand the German position?
I think the Germans. There are several German positions as part of the problem. They're arguing with themselves. I think that Chancellor Scholz is actually quite forward and will have been greatly cheered by the British announcement. This gives him quite a lot of political cover. He can go to more reluctant people within his government and say, look, you know, the Brits are doing it. We're in good company. Come on, guys. Let's give these people the Leopards. But I don't actually think that Germany is the real back marker. The huge silence hanging over this whole debate is about American tanks. You'll have seen that Washington has said nothing at all about supplying American tanks to Ukraine. And I suspect that's because President Biden personally is very cautious over the whole issue. He hasn't said a great deal in public, but what he has said indicates that he's very worried about starting a wider war, World War III, as he calls it. And I suspect that one of the main breaks on the German position is a reluctance to get out ahead of the United States.
Thank you both for joining us this morning, John Everard and Hamish de Breton Gordon. We'll take a break back after this.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.